House Bill 5044, establishing Connecticut vaccine standards. This is a complicated one because there are parts of it that make an awful lot of sense to the average person, but then there are parts of it that may worry some residents as well. So we're going to dive into this with probably the perfect person to discuss it more, Commissioner of the Department of Public Health, Dr. Manisha Jutani. Dr. Jutani, thank you so much for giving us the time, especially because I know it was a very busy day up at the Capitol, a lot of public hearings. This one probably drawing a lot of one of the bigger crowds, certainly. Talk a little bit about, you know, why we even created this. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. The CDC changed its standard of, it was 18, now it's 11, what they call recommended, not required, but recommended vaccines for children earlier this year. And that sort of prompted Connecticut to say, well, wait a minute, things like Hep A, Hep B, and RSV, these are things that now, if they're not recommended at the national level, we don't want that to be an issue in Connecticut. So to some degree, maybe we need to create our own list. Correct? Am I right in saying how we got to this place where we even created this bill?
So thanks for having me, Melissa. You know, this is actually a little bit more nuanced and complicated than that. And the conversation around this, the need for a bill like this, actually started last summer when it became clear that, first of all, the members of the ACIP, or the Advisory Committee on Immunizations Practices, which evaluates these vaccines through a rigorous evidence-based approach, were all dismissed, and a new group of people were brought in. And thereafter, it became clear that the usual system that has been pretty transparent and clear, where people have to declare conflicts, people have to evaluate information from a very graded scientific approach, that same system was not going to be the case. And so we started thinking about where was our vulnerability in the state of Connecticut. And this is where the vulnerability lies. The first is, we purchase all vaccines from the federal government off of CDC contracts. And if the CDC were to say, well, ACIP does not recommend these vaccines anymore, and therefore you cannot purchase them off of our contracts, we would not have a way to purchase any vaccine for any child in the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the recommendations that came out of the secretary in January were, later, we started realizing we would have trouble purchasing. Pharmacists would have trouble administering, because pharmacists' ability to administer is all linked to ACIP in our current statutes. And people who are on Connecticut insurance-regulated programs, where their insurance is regulated by the state insurance department, mm-hmm. also those statutes covered and relate back to the ACIP. The ability to purchase, administer, and pay for those vaccines would be threatened if the ACIP started doing something different than usual. So the recommendations from the secretary were actually secondary. We were actually concerned about this even before that happened.
And I think that that's a clear concern. I mean, so the reason I brought up January was because when I saw the number drop from 18 to 11, we actually kind of talked about, we have a doctor come on our show every single week since before the pandemic. And, you know, we call him the voice of reason. He's in our medical field. Dr. Brown from Griffin Health has been in the industry for a long time and just, you know, comes at it from a medical approach, not really from any political approach. He outlined certainly that list and where, if you dropped some of the ones that used to be on there, where it would be a concern. And we also talked about health insurance coverage. My father, my husband, they're brokers in health insurance. And if you're not going to have that covered, you're talking about people, you know, either paying out of pocket for those things or not being able to access them, to your point. So it became very real. It felt like in January, but I appreciate the clarity that this was actually something that's been in the works for much longer than that. So thank you for that. And I think there is a means for it. Where it seems like residents are worried, though, is where do we determine then which vaccines are recommended? So to your point, if we've seen a whole new group of people come in, make recommendations that could threaten our access and our affordability to it and being able to keep Connecticut residents healthy and safe. Who are we relying on then to make that list of recommended vaccines? Because I noticed the bill doesn't actually list the recommended vaccines.
So there are two points here. The first is to determine a list of recommended vaccines that would allow for those three things that I talked about, purchase, administration, and insurance coverage. And what we have always relied upon by law in the state of Connecticut is that the Commissioner of the Department of Public Health is informed by the ACIP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and other potentially medical societies. What we have added to this particular bill is to also be informed by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, since pregnant populations are slightly different, and we need to think about that, and any other medical societies, so established medical groups who are evaluating this information. Now, there is a second piece of this that I know has many people concerned. Separate and apart from what is recommended, that then allows us to purchase, administer, and cover by insurance, is the school-mandated vaccines. This is a separate issue than what is recommended. The school-mandated vaccines are determined by the Commissioner of the Department of Public Health. It is a smaller list than the recommended vaccines. So, for example, a vaccine like HPV, which prevents cervical cancer, that particular vaccine is recommended for children. However, it is not a school-mandated vaccine. So the school-mandated vaccine list is a subset of the recommended list. And that currently goes through a process of regulatory review committee. So we have the Legislative Regulatory Review Committee, who then approves whichever list is put forward by DPH. The original bill sought to get rid of that review. However, we've heard the comments from the public and concerns from legislators on both sides of the aisle. And as you can see in my testimony yesterday, both verbal and written, the administration has said that we are fine with maintaining the current process, which would go through that legislative review and approval process. So at least I heard from Representative Candelora yesterday that he appreciated my testimony, both written and then what I said after the fact. And I think that we have a meeting of the minds that if we keep that in place, most people are comfortable with that.
We are talking to the Commissioner of the Department of Public Health, Dr. Manisha Dutani, and we're talking about this bill that certainly had a lot of feedback, a lot for a public hearing, and I do want to get that feedback as well, Dr. Dutani. My biggest, I think, question, and probably the biggest concern from people is, you know, you mentioned mandated vaccines, and obviously it's a different subset, the school mandated vaccines. The way I read the bill, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, so feel free to correct me, is that you would have the ability to mandate, for example, flu vaccines or COVID vaccines under this legislation if it were to pass. And it would be based on, as you mentioned, the recommendation or looking at, you know, other major medical-based organizations. But that does include, as you said, the ACIP, which prompted you in the summer to say, wait a minute, we don't really love the way that this group is going, what this is going to mean. So first of all, do I have that correct, that if this were to pass, you would have the ability to mandate vaccines based on what you're seeing from other medical organizations?
That's incorrect. There are no new mandates and no new ability to enforce mandates in this vaccine bill.
Okay, so you wouldn't be able to say that kids now are required to get the COVID vaccine or kids are now required to get the flu vaccine to go to school?
It has always been part of, and this is the existing law that's been on the books since 2010, that the health commissioner has the ability to say these are the vaccines that are required to go to school. It then needs to be approved by the legislature. That has always been the case before me and on the books since 2010. So there's nothing in this law that is different than what has been on the books all along.
So then why are people panicking?
Because I think we are in an environment where you say vaccines and you say that we are doing something different than what we've done before, and it elicits a lot of trauma for people, partly from the pandemic, partly from people's frustration with the medical system, because doctors are required to see patients in 15 minutes and get them in and out. And that is what providers are struggling with. And so when patients are having a hard time feeling like they're getting any real advice, doctors are struggling with what they went into this profession for and having a hard time actually accomplishing what they want to accomplish. We're at a point in our healthcare system where any sort of mention on something around vaccines, where actually what we're trying to do is maintain access and choice for people in the Connecticut. There are no new mandates in this bill, but it brings up the concerns around removing the religious exemption that the legislature did in 2021. And so it just harkens back to a lot of concerns that people have. But I can tell you there is no intention to mandate any new vaccine at this time. There has been no new vaccine mandate for school children since 2011. And I understand that people have concerns around the religious exemption that was removed in 2021. Medical exemptions still do exist. They do need to be verified by a physician. But I just think that we are in a very heightened environment where I appreciate the opportunity to try to explain this on your show, and hopefully some people can hear what I'm saying. And I do hear people's frustration with what they're experiencing in the medical system right now. But that is not what this bill is trying to accomplish.
No, and I honestly appreciate that, Dr. Giuttani, because as a journalist, I mean, you talk about heightened fears and things like that. I was inundated with, I don't know, messages on social media and screenshots and things like that. People saying we will be mandated to have a COVID vaccine. I don't enjoy reading bills because, and that, not because I don't like doing my job, but because it's a lot of jargon that, again, I, you know, you can make sense of it, but it makes a whole lot more sense when the people putting it forward or who can really speak to it more educationally, somebody like you, can make sense of it. I never, and I said this on my show, I said, I'm not seeing anything here about COVID flu. Heck, I'm not even seeing any vaccines actually listed here. So that's the first part, and you addressed it, which is that things light on fire very quickly because we have such access to misinformation, but also we have such exposure to so many different resources and outlets for news. We don't know what is real, half real, and totally false. To that, though, you know, I also am, I appreciate that we haven't seen actually children mandated vaccine, that list change, you said, since 2011. What about for adults? And if you could clarify what we did see during COVID, because that also gets tossed around a lot, the fact that there were people mandated in their workplaces to get the COVID vaccine or they would be terminated. I mean, that did happen. So I think that also plays into that fear.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, we were in hopefully once in a century pandemic. And I will tell you that if we look back to our history in the United States of America, going back to the 1918 flu pandemic and the roaring 20s that came after that, there was a very similar backlash that we're seeing against government, against mandates. There is nothing in this bill about new mandates. There are no circumstances currently for which mandates would be anything we would consider. There is, I will say, in every state, there is some provision around a governor declaring a public health emergency, like he did in COVID, where different actions may be deemed necessary. And this goes back to the origins of our country. And things have been litigated in the Supreme Court. These types of issues in the United States of America in particular, we have fundamental challenges around individual rights and what is good for a population at large. There are no circumstances right now at all that suggest any sort of widespread public health emergency. And this bill does not address any sort of issue around a widespread emergency. The only part of the bill where something around an emergency is addressed is the ability to issue a standing order. Now, what does that mean? That means, let's say we had a huge flu outbreak and a lot of people could benefit from Tamiflu. Let's say you're at home and you do a test and you figure out you have the flu. This bill would give the commissioner the authority to write a standing order at a pharmacy for Tamiflu. What does that mean? It does not mean anybody has to take it. It just means you could go in and just get a prescription for Tamiflu because you tested positive for flu at home. So that provision is part of the bill.
Right.
It does extend to vaccines. Again, no mandates. If you want it, if you want a new shot that is available in the emergency, should there be one.
And I think that's a good thing. I can't see anybody not wanting access. Like, I mean, no, who wouldn't want access? I think the fear is to your point earlier, is when we were in a global pandemic, and I agree with you. I hope we don't see one, you know, for God ever. But to that point, there was a determination, and it was really, it felt like based on federal recommendations and whether people agreed with the federal recommendations or not, people had to follow those mandates. And sort of like what we're seeing now, where the ACIP is changing and Connecticut's worried about it. You know, there are people who, again, are, as you mentioned, you're worried about what the recommendations are from the ACIP and what that's going to mean for us to access things. But I think people worry that, OK, but why 5 years ago did we need to mandate vaccines in a global pandemic based on, you know, medical professionals at the federal level that some people did not agree with at all?
Look, the circumstances are different now, and we're 5 years into this, almost six, from when this pandemic started.
Yeah.
And it took us 3 years to get out of that. You know, as somebody who worked in the hospital, seeing COVID patient after COVID patient, you know, I think for a lot of people who didn't work in that environment, what it meant to try to figure out how can we stop the onslaught of patients coming into this hospital.
Yeah.
This is what really necessitated those types of decisions. And think about, I mean, we all want to forget about COVID. We all want to forget about all the various waves, the initial wave and the alpha wave and the delta wave and the Omicron wave and on and on. This went on for so long that people are traumatized by it. I don't blame anybody. We all are in some way or another. The problem is we do need to figure out, and this bill is about access and coverage, but what it instigates in people is a hearkening back to, I had to get this shot. I lost my job because I couldn't do what I wanted to do, and I understand that. That is a very unfortunate time in our history, and unfortunately, there were a lot of people that died. Over a million people died in this country, and it was measures that were taken to try to keep as many people as safe as possible. And we are not anywhere close to a circumstance where we would consider something like that. I want to give you just one sort of frame of reference. The last time childhood vaccines that were added to the schedule for schools were considered, there had already been about 80% uptake of a given vaccine to be considered again to be added to that schedule. And so that's for something like meningococcus, which prevents meningitis.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at COVID vaccines in the state of Connecticut for children, we are in the, you know, 15% of kids getting a COVID vaccine. We would never consider adding a COVID vaccine to something that is mandated. That would be an uphill battle that would never even be under consideration. So when you look at trying to, you know, mandate a vaccine, yes, it is for communicable diseases. Yes, it is for diseases where kids who are in schools together are going to be transmitting something a lot to each other. We call these congregate settings,
mm-hmm.
and there are lots of them. Nursing homes would be another congregate setting. We look to try to make sure, first of all, that there is so much uptake in the community already,
right,
that really all you're trying to do is get that last bit of people over the hump to be able to say that, okay, now we've reached a threshold where it was the last maybe 15% of people that we were trying to get this vaccine.
The herd immunity. Right. Right. No, I hear you. Unfortunately, Dr. Giuttani, I have run out of time. I'm actually way over time. I apologize. But I really appreciate you being candid on this and talking about this. And certainly we'll continue to follow this very closely. We'll see where the legislation goes. But thank you so much for coming on and talking about, again, a hot button topic, but also clarifying some things for us as well.